Broadcasting from InnieUpMagazine.com and 620 WDAE AM, the sports animal in Tampa Bay, Florida.
With your hosts, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's time to Ante Up. It's September 5th, 2008, and you're listening to the best poker podcast on the internet. And Scott, I have a question for you. Do you like caviar?
Caviar. I have not yet had the experience in life to afford fish eggs.
Well, okay, but the whole fact that they're fish eggs and you've never had them means that they're probably something that, an acquired taste, I would say, right? Because it sounds kind of gross.
Yeah, I imagine that after I would eat them, I would probably acquire a taste for
some taste.
Them.
But of course, an acquired taste also goes hand in hand with something that is, it's appreciated. You know, like rich people have caviar. You know? So the finer things in life could maybe be congruent to things that are an acquired taste.
I see that. Yeah. All right.
Because recently I heard that our show was an acquired taste. I read it actually on a website called Poker Podcast Review.
Okay.
The guy had never heard of our show until recently, and then said, "Oh, turns out they have the Bluff Reader's Choice Award.
Mm-hmm.
So I might as well tune in." And like the first thing he says about it is, "It's an acquired taste." And I said, "I don't know how to take that. I think that might not be a good thing." Because then he started talking about, it sounds like there are a couple of radio guys who just like poker. And I was like, well, I guess that's kind of a compliment since we're really not radio guys. We're more poker players and journalists.
Yeah, but, and he certainly must have heard the most recent shows, too. He didn't.
Exactly.
There's transitional shows from studio to studio.
Exactly. Well, one of the things that he disliked about our show was because he listened to the show last week where we talked about Mike Sexton, and I didn't really know the answer of why he would say something like that about poker tech tables.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out because Lyle Berman is the owner of the company, and of course he's the guy who started the World Poker Tour, and he basically pays Mike Sexton's bills, which that was fine. You like to bring up newsy things during the show, and I like to react to them. It's not like we had our internet connection here, and we had it was just a casual comment that I dropped. But this person who reviewed the show was like, "Do your research." And I was like, "Oh, man. That's half the fun of the show is us just not really knowing. And it gives us stuff to talk about next week." You know what I mean?
We're freewheeling.
That's right.
We just throw ourselves out there.
That's right. This is how we sustained 3.5 years of doing this.
If you want a new show, we're just never going to be that.
Attention and Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea. Flash. They don't do any research. But of course, yes, Lyle Berman owns that. And then the other thing he griped about was the whole Hoyle thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And to me, the Hoyle thing is just an ongoing joke. Sure, we could stop at Barnes & Noble on the way home. You hear that, Barnes & Noble? We dropped your name. Advertise. Anyway, we could stop there and grab a Hoyle book and look and see if 5-card stud's in there. But it's an ongoing thing.
It's a debate. We like having debates.
This is the whole reason why we are doing the show, so you and I can argue, because we're going to argue a lot today.
I have a feeling we will.
And so that was another thing, was the Hoyle thing. We just, I don't know. 5-card stud in Hoyle, is it not? I don't know. But I know you know a little bit more about Hoyle than I do.
Well, yeah, because, obviously this guy said we need to do some research, so,
You did some.
I went to the big stacks and, got on my tippy toes and pulled some books down.
Dust all on your hair.
Or actually went to this internet thing that's all the rage now. And, it turns out that Mr. Hoyle.
Yes.
Kicked the bucket. 1769.
God.
Not 1969. Not 1869. 1769. George Washington wasn't even tall enough to chop down a cherry tree then.
My God.
And he's apparently our expert on poker.
Well, did they even play poker, even remotely close to the way we play it now back then?
No, I'm pretty sure they did not have double flop Juarez back then.
Wait, double flop Juarez, by definition, would be 4 flops.
Yes.
Because Juarez already has 2 flops.
And it would have to be heads up because you'd run out of cards here.
Hey, we're going to play that after the show.
But, I went on did some research on Mr. Hoyle, and it turns out that people just kind of took his name and ran with it.
Yeah, yeah.
He got to be known as his expert on something way back when, it's probably, 4 experts on anything in the world.
When Washington was being still, fitted for his wooden teeth.
And so then people said, according to Hoyle, and that caught on. And then anybody that wanted to prove whatever they're yapping about was true said, hey, it's according to Hoyle. So that's where we got into this mess last week, and because it's just, he says, hey, according to Hoyle.
Yeah. The man's dead.
And get this, Chris. The guy gets letters.
I know, that's really weird.
People still send him letters.
That's really weird.
Asking for help, particularly probably, hey, is 5-card stud in your book? Because, you know, we want to be sure we're well-researched for our next show.
Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, he's not responding because he's dead.
I sent him an email.
Yeah, I tried to become his friend on MySpace, too, but it didn't work out. Not there. Yeah.
He wouldn't accept you, right?
Not there.
Yeah, he thinks you're a porn ad because your name is Scott Long. Oh, man.
But yes, we will certainly try to be more we'll
accommodating with our research.
Button the top button on our polos next week and be a little more formal and prepared. And
I think we got to, from now on, put the top up in your car when we drive to the studio, too, because I don't look very professional now with my hair blown in the air.
Yeah, here's the thing, Chris. You don't look very professional anyhow. So.
I try now, you know, because we're businessmen. But I tell you, one thing we did research was the winner of the Apes event.
We did. We do know that.
One of the things that we, I guess a casualty of doing the show at a different time now is that we do it on a Thursday, so we never get to actually talk about Apes the next following week, so it's actually 2 weeks later, but a very interesting story, actually a few interesting stories came out of this, but the winner, Zorag, is a longtime listener, big time involvement now with the forum stuff, he's really coming
very
on strong. Very active. But it's the first time he played Apes, and he wins the banana.
How many times has that happened? We've had a bunch of Virgin Apes winners.
Yeah, a few times.
And neither you or I have even sniffed the peel of a banana.
No. Yeah, you're right. We've made final tables, though.
Yeah, but that's not good enough. No one remembers final tables.
All right. So, yeah,
win the fruit.
It's happened a lot, and it's amazing how excited people get over a piece of paper that sticks to a piece of plastic produce by glue. But hey, they want it, and there's nowhere else they can get it. Really,
it's a unique item. If you want a bracelet that's studded with diamonds and gold, you can go out and buy one. May not say Hera's on it, but you can go out and buy one.
That's right.
You want a piece of plastic imported fruit and a piece of paper.
You just can't
have to go through Apes to get it.
That's right. You just can't get it unless there's eBay. But you know.
All right. So what happened to you, Chris? You were all the rage in this tournament.
Yes.
And then...
for good reason, too. I was
poof!
Kicking
you were
butt.
Like the tricked rabbit. Gone.
Here's what happens, okay? I, for the first hour, didn't even play a hand, essentially. And when I did play a hand, I played a really good hand and won a big pot. And I was actually a chip leader. And then, like, three hands later, poof. I had four cards to an ace-high flush, plus all four of those cards were to a 7-low. On 5th Street, I made my 7-low. On 6th Street, I made 2 aces. On 7th Street, I made 3 aces. And all of a sudden, I'm staring at my screen for 20 minutes because it says I went out in 27th place. I said, wait a minute, I had 3 aces and a 7-low. And, I was knocked out. Theron knocked me out with a rivered flush and a rivered 5 or a rivered 6. I don't know what it was, but it was the most brutal beat I ever took. And then from there, I totally tilted off, like, I don't know, $5,000 on full tilt after that. I was so pissed off. But I was pumped for this event. I guaranteed I was going to cash. I was one of the chip leaders. I was in the money the whole time I was in the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow you outlasted me.
That is very true.
I don't even think you had a chip.
No, I did not, actually. I started off pretty well and won a couple pots. And then, boom, the brick wall that's known as card dead. And then I just kind of limped.
Yeah,
I was like an injured gazelle. Just trying to get to the lake to get my last little drink of water. And next thing I know, I look up and I'm like, all right, I'm going to be out. I'm going to sign off. I'm going to be in 40th place or something ridiculous like that and be embarrassed.
Yeah.
And I looked up and we were in the 20s already.
I know. I really.
But there's 24th. I don't know how that happened.
When I looked up and saw that, I thought, all right, I'm going to cash. I mean, it's paying 12. Or I'm in 27th. There's only, you know, 27 people left. I mean, I'm just 27 people left. Of course, I went out 27th, but. It was very exciting. The final table had an interesting twist. One of the players lost their connection. And, Zorag called and talked about that. And I think he's a little excited.
Hey, guys, it's Zorag again. Keely made it back. Had about a 10-1 chip lead on her, but she had a chance to come back and try to get it. But I just want to say that I won my first banana, so woohoo!
Man, I tell you, they just love the banana.
You just get amped up for apes.
Man, but I tell you what, nice, give them props for trying to stick it out and let that person come back.
That's like the second time this year, I think, people have done that. So
this
just speaks to the community.
It speaks to how we raise our youngins. You know, it reflects on us. You know, courtesy. That's what apes is all about. Friendly, fun, poker, and courtesy. That's our motto. I think we're going to put that in the magazine.
Sounds good.
Come play apes.
So, and if you were worried that it wasn't friendly and courteous, you have a shot to come and find out that it really is. On September 18th, 9 p.m. on Full Tilt. No limit hold'em, six-handed, Chris.
Wow. Have we done that yet before?
Not this year, but we did last year.
Yeah, because, you know, it seems that the months are just flying by. Feels like I just played in a shorthanded one with us.
Yeah, forever. Just four more bananas left to go.
Wow.
And the password is ante up, as always.
All one word. And, you know, I tell you, apes, it's a tough series.
It is.
I'm telling you.
It is.
Maybe I should learn a new game. What do you think?
Let's start trying to crack that double flop Juarez. But in the meantime, though, maybe we can go for a little 211 poker.
211. I love the name of that, too. Because you hear it and you think, wow, what kind of poker game involves 211? Is it 211 cards? What is it? Of course, we'll find out now.
It's two blackjacks is what it is.
It's true.
Two double down.
Two double down. Yeah, two double down.
Yeah.
Let's not confuse anybody, all right?
When I was at the World Series, I stumbled upon this game called 211 Poker. And if you heard a couple shows back, we had a nice little interview with the founder's brother talking about this new game that they're trying to get into casinos. And it's called 211 Poker. And the deal is you get four cards.
Right.
Can only use two or three. Cannot use one or four in your hand. You have to use two or three. There are only two cards on the flop, Chris.
Yes.
And then one turn, one river, hence the 2-1-1-2-11.
Awesome.
And it is played high-low with a 7 qualifier, not an 8.
That will throw a lot of people off.
It very, very will.
Yeah.
Because you're so used to the 8. No one ever plays that kind of qualifier.
Yeah.
But anyhow, so when we were yapping about it, and you asked some good questions that I could not answer about royalties and things like that. And the founder of the game himself, Bruce Paul, called our hotline up. I think he was angling for a DB dealer button, but I wasn't giving it in. But we did have a very nice conversation this week, and he had some interesting things to say about 211 poker. The first one was that they've already been approved in Nevada and Washington, which I think we knew, but they also now have tentative approval here in Florida.
Awesome. I can't wait to see that being dealt around here. You know, and I think we were talking about this, too, is I just didn't understand how they can make enough money doing it, you know. But, you know, I think you were saying that this guy, he just wants to be known for inventing a new game.
Yeah, well, essentially what he's doing is he's looking for royalties on the game. So if, you know, if it's going to be dealt at your local casino, that, you know, he'll get a royalty contract from that casino to be able to deal 211 poker there, in, you know, in a state that it's approved. But, you know, ultimately, after I talked to him for almost an hour, and I think ultimately he's very proud of the game, likes the game, and wants to see it going, and he'll just be happy knowing that the world knows that Bruce Paul invented 211 poker.
I like it. I like the idea of it, and I think we're going to come up with our own sort of strategy for it, and then maybe we'll even teach it on the show someday.
Ooh, maybe.
You know, first, we're going to have to try it out in our home game.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then see if it's worth it, and then we'll teach it in the home game.
Because you know, we want to get an endorsement contract. We want to be the class of 211 poker around the world. Robert Williamson can have Omaha, but I'm with 211 poker.
Scott, I'm very proud of you. I think you did a lot of research on this. I think we've covered it. What do you think?
But, you know, 211 Poker, the other thing, too, is he's trying to get into some online rooms.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty good market for him, Chris, I think, because the most recent poker traffic numbers came out for online.
Mm-hmm.
Our good friends at Poker Scout have said that online poker has grown 25%.
Which I think is remarkable.
The past year.
I think that's remarkable, especially with the UEIGAMOUSE thing. I think that's that's really fantastic because, you know what, that's a banner year. Even if you don't have the government from America breathing down your neck and, you know what I mean, that's a pretty good
Exactly.
Increase.
Any business that can do 25% growth every year should be happy, I think.
Especially
and
in
it's
this
an
economy.
Industry.
Yeah. So 211 has a future online too then, I think.
Yeah, probably.
Well, how did some of the sites do?
Well, of course, PokerStars is really big, and they really are expanding into focusing more on the world market now, and they were up 72% last year.
God, that's incredible.
Full Tilt, which is focusing more on the U.S., was still up 54%.
That's remarkable.
But the little upstart, Cake Poker, you've seen those cool ads, 89% up. Of course, you know, they're starting a little smaller, so they're smaller, it's easier to do 89%.
Yeah, because you know what? If we start our own website, as soon as we've got one person to join, we'd be up 100%. And then another one would be 200%.
And then we'll quit. Because we're like, hey, we had 100% growth.
200% growth. Exactly. But yeah, it still is significant, especially given the big boys that are out there and they're competing against them.
And of course, people are looking to be safe online, so obviously Absolut is still weathering the effects of their scandal there, and they actually dropped 29%. But
yeah.
But yeah, very promising numbers for online.
Well, speaking of safety online, too, I'm sure you know about this Brian Townsend, quote, scandal.
Yes,
thing, right?
Yes,
I think scandal is such a harsh word.
I think
he's coming under, in my opinion, I think he's coming under too much fire for this.
Okay.
For our readers who don't know, he is one of the owners of Card Runners. He's a high-stakes player, and he plays often under the name SB Rugby. When he was on Full Tilt, but now he's a red pro there. Well, actually, he's not anymore because he had, for what he did, his indiscretion, he got 6 months suspended. But
timeout.
Right. But when he wasn't a red pro, he was SB Rugby. Everybody knows who he is. And he came forward and said that he was running pretty bad, and so he started different accounts to play under different account names because he wanted to go in lower limits. And he at no time ever entered the same tournament with multiple accounts and never entered, you know, the same table with, the, you know, none of that ever happened. He just wanted some anonymity and he wanted to drop down. And I just have no problem with this. I don't tell anyone what my PokerStars account is. No one knows who I am out there. Why can't he start over and put another account out there and just play as that person? And then if you're good enough, you're going to play against him and beat him or not beat him anyway. So what's the difference? And then he'll get a reputation as who he is anyway. I just don't have a problem with this. And I don't know if you do or not. I see you nodding, but I'm not sure if you have a problem with it.
Well, I have a problem with it because it's against the terms of conditions on the websites that you should only have one account under one name. You know, and we're taking a leap of faith that he has not played on multiple tables. I certainly have no reason to believe that he's not being honest about that. So in general, I mean, I'm kind of with you. I don't...
They could prove it, too, couldn't they? Couldn't the websites check and say...
Well, I guess they could go through that whole big research like Absolut did and stuff like that.
I don't think it would be that difficult.
It could not be. It might not be, but you know, ultimately, it's not a big deal to me. It's really what it came down to. It's just going to have an ego problem. He just, you know, he didn't want people to know he dropped down in levels, and I don't know. I guess I have a problem with that and the fact that I don't think it's wrong. Poker runners run bad. I mean, no one runs 100% all the time. No one's always running good. Sometimes you can. That's part of poker. And if you can't handle running poorly, then you can't be a poker player. And he can handle it, obviously, because he was smart enough to know that he needed to drop down in levels. I just don't know why he felt the need to mask the fact that he was running bad and just try to work his way up.
Well, there's a little line in here about that he likes his anonymity too, and I think that might have played in this. I think he might have said, you know what, I want to be able to just play and relax and go down a level and build my bankroll back up and then go back and play the way I've used to play. I think it was anonymity. I think every player, once they get noted, even us, we deal with it all the time. You know, you sit down, this week I bluffed off like, I don't know, $70 on a hand.
That's a good week for you.
Yeah, it's a terrible week. And one of our fans is on the show, at the table. And I thought, oh my God, this guy saw me bluff all this table. He's not going to listen to the show anymore, you know. But I made a move. I thought the guy would fold it because I was representing the trips at round board, and he ended up having just the queen. And I thought to myself, man, you know, how could this guy call? And then I was like, I thought I told the story and I didn't. But now I'm thinking, wait a minute, a fan was at the table. And now, you know, and you guys are always talking, you're trying to concentrate and they're talking to you and stuff. I can understand why. And you're talking about, I think you would say something like, you know, oh, you could turn off the chat. But that's not the point. People start gunning for you, too, when they know who you are and they want to beat you and say, hey, I beat SB Rugby out of a big pot, you know, whatever. But if he's playing an anonymity...
Hey, fame, ain't it a bitch? I heard that on a show before.
Well, I think that if any player wanted to change their persona, they would. I mean, let's take Angelina Jolie, for instance.
Yes, please, let's take her.
If she could do... If she could do the whole, you know, John Travolta, Nicolas Cage face-off thing, I think she would easily go and grab, like, you know, some unknown face and put it on and go out and shop for a day.
That's probably true.
So,
but she knew what she was bargaining with when she decided to become famous.
I understand.
There is a sharp edge on the other side of this glorious fame that people aspire to. And that is that you can't be a normal person and also be a famous person.
But see, now this is what I'm getting back at, too, with Brian Townsend. He did not get into poker to be famous. He got into poker to make money. He enjoyed the competition. He enjoyed not having to work for a living. and he made a lot of money. And now that he's going through a bad run, why do we have to all of a sudden, you know, respect the fact that, or not respect the fact that he's a
but he put himself out there. That's what he did. I mean, there's no, he didn't have to become a Red Pro on Full Tilt and have that kind of fame and attention, but he chose to. And same with card runners. So if you put yourself out there, you can't turn that off.
Well, he did, though.
You either go out there and you accept all the trappings of fame, which is great, and the bad parts with it as well, too, or you just decide to be anonymous for the rest of your life. There's a lot of poker players out there, I'm sure, that are making gazillions of dollars a year and are not entering World Poker Tour or World Series events and not signing endorsement contracts because they realize, hey, I just don't want to deal with all that kind of stuff, and so I'm going to give up some potential income by not putting myself out there, but I'm going to live a normal life. Well, he chose a different route, and then he wanted to go a different way.
Which is all the more reason why I don't fault him for doing what he did. Because you're saying that it's black or white, that there, once you become famous, you can't ever have any anonymity. But he found a way to do it. And
he found a way to do it in violation of terms and conditions. So that's not a way to do it.
I understand, but I think that as long as you agree not to use it, you know what I mean? It's just this whole weird, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope.
It is. But, you know, I'm glad you brought it up because I remember we talked about this before and you had said how, you know, you can't go to a casino because I guarantee if Phil Ivey went to a casino and he put on like a mask, you know, like a mask or a disguise.
Okay.
He'd be able to enjoy some anonymity.
Not at all. There's not a casino in the world that Phil Ivey could walk into.
I totally disagree
with you. And not be noticed.
And do you know why I disagree with you?
Why?
Because in this month's Bluff magazine, Phil Locke played the main event at the World Series in disguise, and no one knew who he was.
All right, now we're talking. You know, I have great respect for Phil Locke, and he brings a lot of energy and personality to poker. But I'm sorry, he's not Phil Ivey.
No, I know if Phil Ivey did what Phil Locke did, no one would know it was Phil Ivey. And if he wanted to do that, was what Phil Locke did wrong? He got the whole like makeup crew, and they gave him the fake skin and old, and he get a little goatee thing and a hat on. I mean, he was an old man. He played as an old man, and no one knew who he was. The ESPN crew figured it out because they got his seat card, and they said, "Wait a minute, how can that guy be playing in Phil Locke's seat?" So then they came up to him and approached him later, and eventually they figured it out. But the players had no idea at the table, and so he was looking for anonymity. He wanted to play it as if he was someone else, and everyone wouldn't give him respect because...
And the difference is there's probably no terms of condition at the World Series of Poker that says you have to look like you did last year when you're on TV.
I understand that.
Sadly, but... for some people, the online terms of agreement are you have one account, and that is the account you play under.
All right.
That's the difference.
All right, to let everybody know, too, we asked Brian Townsend to be on the show, but he undercame so much fire through the forums like 2+2 and just hate mail and things like that, that he, you know, he's burnt out. And he said, his spokesperson said, you know, we'd love to have him on the show, but right now he's just burnt out. So we were disappointed in that because within the letter that he had released to the public, he said he wouldn't dodge anybody and he wouldn't, turn down interviews. So maybe he'll change his mind. Maybe when it's all settled down, he'll come back and be on the show. And we'll talk about all kinds of things with him, card runners and his quick rise to fame, as I'm sure he now regrets. But, anyway, we did try to have him on the show, and it was going to be this week, but they backed out last minute. So, anyway, good luck there, Brian. We hope everything works out okay.
All right, so now, Chris, part of being low-limit anonymous players like we are,
yeah,
is that we don't normally cash $5,000 wins.
You don't, but I do, all the time.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I'm glad that we're sending the copy of this show to the IRS, so they'll be knocking on your...
Yeah, you're right.
Pretty soon, and you better have your old man makeup on, so they don't know it's you. But I. Nelson Rose, he's a professor at Whittier, a college out at Whittier, and a preeminent expert on online gambling.
Yeah.
We tried to get him on the show once or twice before. It just hasn't worked out yet.
He was burnt out, too. He didn't want to be on the show either.
Of course. But he has a very interesting article on Poker Pages this week that says that there's a new IRS rule that says that every poker operator in the United States has to report anyone who wins more than $5,000 in a poker tournament. Now, he says to get around the fact that Congress never authorized this, the IRS is pretending to require that 25% or more of these winners' prizes have to be withheld by the poker operators and forwarded to the IRS. And he says, Chris, it's only partially true. And essentially what he said is this is, he's equating this essentially to the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act.
Right.
And the fact that, you know, Congress passed this law, of course it was in the middle of the night.
Yeah, of
but
course.
But there theoretically could have been some public comment on it. But really the details and how this gets worked out are hashed out later on outside of the realm of public participation. And that's exactly the same thing here too. And he says the IRS is interpreting a law based on a 1976 law that had a term called a wagering pool, which goes all the way back to 1950s.
Yeah, the 50s.
Not the 1750s where Hoyle was around, but 1950s.
Yeah.
Still way too long ago to be basing this kind of stuff.
Hey, they're visionaries. They totally saw the future and said, there's going to be a poker tournament someday. So let's lump it into this wagering pool so that some obscure, you know, politician can bring this up and make us pay taxes on $5,000 cashes. I tell you, you know this and it's kind of off topic, but it came to mind when you were talking about it to me. These new tracking systems that were popping up everywhere now for the players, the Genesis tracking systems, I'm starting to worry about them now, actually. I mean, I think they're a great thing for rewarding the players and keeping track of how the dealers do and how much money's being dropped. But really, I can see this as being Big Brother someday, where the government passes a law where you have to have these tracking systems in your rooms, and you have to, if someone wants to play in your room, they have to register for a card, put your social security number on it, and then whenever you buy in for an amount, it keeps track of how much you've bought in for and how much you've won and how much you've lost. You know, I can see them putting little chips inside the chips, you know, that keep track of where the chips are and who's got them.
Yeah, they're already doing that in some rooms.
Yeah, so that's kind of scary, don't you
think? You're
a little
spooked, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm a little spooked.
I can see you're hiding over there.
I don't want to...
You're waiting for the Big Brother to come on the TV.
Yeah.
Chris, do not talk about the player tracking system.
I keep waiting for the lady in the orange shirts to come out with the big hammer, the big sledgehammer, and throw it through the glass window here. No, but really, I mean, it could get to that point, couldn't it?
Well, we're already to that point with a lot of things. I mean, you know, we all use credit cards everywhere, and all that stuff is tracking stuff, and it's just going to get more tracked as we go forward.
Yeah.
Now, the player cards obviously offer a certain amount of benefits to players because it's a way of tracking their play, and then casinos can then reward them for that. But obviously, you're right. The flip side of it is that you're sharing a lot of information that perhaps you may not want to be sharing and perhaps may not be worth sharing considering what kind of benefits you'll get back.
I mean, right now, the obviously, the information you're giving them is minimal. Like when we signed up for our card over at Daytona when we went for our little road trip, you know, we just gave them our name, our number, and our address or whatever. But I mean, there's no social security number on there. There's no saying you have to swipe the card.
Exactly.
But
right now, like you're saying
the
maybe
government could pass a law someday that says you got to have this system in your card room. And anybody who plays at a table has to have this card and has to have the social security on it, and they have to swipe it. And that could happen someday, and that's scary.
And, you know, and particularly in Florida, we're in an interesting kind of a legal climate here where the min-max for no limit is $100.
Right.
And we talked about how silly that is that people are playing 5-10, but that's because that's the law.
Yeah,
and essentially, I think what happened is legislators wanted to be sure that people weren't going to lose the rent money,
right?
And they could only lose $100. That's not a big deal. And of course, that's silly because you lose your buy-in. You can rebuy in for $100, and it hampers your play. You'd probably do much better if you're just allowed to buy in for $300 to start with,
because you could play the game you want to play. You can relax a little bit, and it's a lot different when you put $300 on the table and you lose all that. Then if you just go 100, 100, 100, then you're in that pattern of losing 100 if you're not very good. So
exactly. But with player tracking systems, then they would be able to do that. They'd be able to track how much you bought in for and be able to cut you off after 300. I'm not saying players would like that, but, you know, technology does allow for more easily updating the laws, or at least the wishes of our legislature as well, too.
Well, it just makes me upset. And speaking of being upset, I love this next item you want to talk about. This cracks me up.
Well, you know, it's expensive to run a college out there these days, Chris. You know, tuition's getting out of control. People can't afford it.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, colleges are always been very smart about selling advertising and trying to suck money in because they know people are just out there salivating at getting at that disposable income that college students have.
Right, right.
And the good folks up at Dawson College in Montreal did the same thing. They wanted to give out a free day planner to their students. But, of course, they want to puck up the money to actually print this thing. So what they did is they hired an outside company to sell some ads on there, cover the cost, probably put a little coin in the trustees fund there.
Uh-huh.
And turns out they were none too happy when they got the day planner and saw that there was an ad for Plaza 138 Poker, which is a gambling centra in Canada. C-N-T-R-E. I love how they do that there.
It's still center.
I know, but it's centra. It sounds more Canadian, I guess. But now this this Plaza 138 offers free food, alcohol, and indoor smoking.
Mm.
And, of course, poker. The college didn't seem to be quite too happy that there's a company like this that's trying to get at their young, impressionable students.
Let's see. Kids? Gambling. Is this a good idea? I guess we're not going to subscribe, send our magazines to the campuses here, South Florida. South Florida, maybe. They're gambling down there, but who knows? You know what, though? The thing about this is you need to write down the name of the company that advertised in this and then give them a call and get them to be an Annie Up, because that's if they're willing to advertise in that thing, then we'll have the Annie Up Canadian edition.
That's true. Now the Centra manager there says that they actually asked the ad company, this could be all right, are you sure we're not going to get any feedback? And the ad company, according to the manager here, said, oh yeah, no problem at all. So
yeah,
turns out
it's a problem.
Not so much.
Check raised in Manitoba? Hey, did you ever watch Live at the Bike?
Once or twice, I believe.
I watched it a couple of times. I think I watched it back when we were first becoming friends with Kenna James, because that was like his home place, and he liked to play on there, and I liked to watch him on there once in a while.
It's a nice casino.
Yeah, and it was a good show, too. I mean, it still is a good show, obviously. It's now, I think, starting to expand with something called Poker Netcast. It's like this video on demand thing that you can get episodes for 99 cents. And you can see all kinds of shows, not just Live at the Bike, but you have all these shows that Barry Greenstein offers, his strategies. Kenna James is going to be on there, and some other stuff. And what it is every week they have a new episode that they feature, and you can go on their website. I think it's pokernetcast.com. And I don't know. You can use a PayPal account. You can have a subscription. I don't know if there's so much poker on television, so much poker on, PokerTube and YouTube. And I wonder how successful this could be. Of course, we give away a magazine for free. So how smart are we? But really, could this really be successful, Scott? Do you think that it's
viable?
Well,
I mean, people will always pay for something that they think is worth it. So, I mean, I guess the trick is getting somebody to spend that first 99 cents to find out whether it's worth it.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. I mean, there's just so much saturation out there of poker content now that it would really have to probably set itself apart to be able to squeeze even 99 cents out of most people.
Yeah. Well, check it out. PokerNetcast.com, I think, is the name of the website. And it's just, I don't know. I mean, I am. I'm like a TiVo junkie for poker. That's the name of my column in our magazine. Poker,
yeah, we also know your thoughts on expenditures of a dollar.
That's right. So, 99 cents is it goes a long way at the casino with me. So I don't know if I want to spend it on video, but we'll see. We'll see how it does, and we'll keep track of that. But anyway, finally, Joe Navarro, our good friend
Joe Navarro.
Yes, and he truly is our good friend. A lot of times you say it, we don't really know who the hell we're talking about. But really, Joe Navarro, our good friend, got a lot of feedback already after we asked everyone to send in some questions for him for our magazine and for the show. The Annie Up Nation came to the rescue and gave him some really cool things to answer, and he's already taken care of some of them, and we're going to have them in next month's magazine. But please keep them coming, because to have this man at our disposal is just a privilege. I mean, the guy wrote Read 'Em and Reap, very successful book. He's always one of our favorite guests on the show. He had another book called What Everybody Is Saying. And he's working on a few more books, too. And, of course, he's got his video thing on his website, Joe Navarro. I think it's NavarroPoker.com.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to send him a question and you want him to answer it for you in our magazine or even on our show, send it to podcast@antiupmagazine.com or editor@antiupmagazine.com. And we'll be sure to get the question to him, and hopefully he'll answer it. Man's very generous, and we couldn't thank him enough. Props to the Antiup Nation. Thanks. We really appreciate it. So our hotline this week.
Mm-hmm.
We waited a while to play this.
Put it in the vault.
Yeah, and it's brought to you, of course, by the kind folks at dbdealer.com. But we put it in the vault because that's where we were for a few weeks, as you will soon find out.
Hey, Chris and Scott, this is Joe. Just wanted to let you know I just listened to your show, and not to worry, the police are on the way. Yeah, I mean, it definitely sounds like you guys were being held captive in a well or something, and clearly not asking for help means that your captors are close by. So the police are on the way, and we'll get you out and safe. Bet you it was a pokerati, guys. They're just trouble. Keep hope alive.
Yes, very funny. Yes.
Well, when Dick Cheney says get in the bunker, you get in the bunker.
We listen to him,
and that's what we do. We feared for our safety, so we hold up for a couple weeks. tried to do our best with our show, and then you know, when we got the all clear that it was a you know, with a blue threat level, a blue threat poker level, we merged and found ourselves in this brand new nice studio here, the WDE 620 The Sports Animal.
Hey, wait, blue threat. Get out the poker whiz wheel. What does that say about the blue threat? Hey, but you know, it's really, it was sort of like Neo when he meets the architect in The Matrix, because it's all about choice. We had to either decide to keep the streak going, or we had to say, all right, we're going to wait till the DAE deal comes through, and then we'll come back and take the chance of losing our listeners and losing the streak. It's one of our, you know, it's the cornerstone of our show. Exactly. That we've never missed a week.
We're trying to be the Cal Ripkins of poker podcast.
I was calling in from my deathbed.
That's right.
To be on the show. So,
and sadly,
damn,
you recovered, so here
we
are.
I'll be damned if we're going to, you know, sacrifice that streak because we had to tape the show in my guest bedroom a couple of times. So, you know what else, too, is I love when people email us and they say, hey, man, do you know that the sound on the show, you guys sound like you're in a tin can, or there's something wrong. It's all hollow. There's something wrong with your sound. You know, when we had no idea. I had no idea. I was editing the show. I thought it sounded fantastic. I had no clue when I was editing this show that we sounded like we were coming to you from inside a, you know, tomato can. I don't know. It's just, but yeah, it's
spent
amazing.
A lot of time in tomato cans?
I'm Italian.
Oh, okay.
Of course I do. But, you know, you would think that people would, you know, these guys have to know it sounds like this. So why would I even bother telling them? Some people were helpful. They were like, we understand that you're probably taping this in your bedroom. So throw some blankets over you to muffle the sound or muffle the echo or whatever. And so a lot of people were trying to help us out. But now we're in this beautiful studio. And we try to block those memories out. So we're going to not talk about it ever again unless we absolutely have to. So.
But if you want to be on the hotline,
yes,
that number is 813-448-1120. And remember, you have just 1 minute. You got to get right in and get out.
And if you send us your address, we will tell the kind folks at DB Dealer, and they will send you a nice deck of their plastic playing cards.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another 1 Minute Mystery, The Case of the Lucky Numbers. It's the final table of a two-table multi-table tournament. The blinds are 200-400, the ante is 50, and we are down to 6 players. It pays 3.
So far, it's the results of hard work.
2 folds to me in the cutoff, and I look down at 8-8. I have the stack size of about 10K, the button, who acts after me, is 7K, the small blind 3K, and the big blind 13.5K. Also of note is the 2 stacks that have folded, who have between 12 and 15K. As we get towards the end, it takes fewer chips to do the job, so I'm going to raise it up to about 1,200 here.
Oh, my wife, Mrs. Columbo, says I'm very predictable.
Well, the button takes this opportunity to fold, as does the small blind, but the big blind raises to 2,000. It's 800 to win 3,200, so I have to do something here. So am I going to end this hand pre-flop, or am I going to play it post-flop? I decide that discretion is the better end of valor here, and I call. The pot is 4K, and I still have about 7,500 behind. The flop is 4 of spades, 5 of hearts, jack of diamonds. The big blind bets out 4,500.
What does he want me to think?
And did I miss my opportunity to shove my chips in?
Okay, so we went over this last week, and I think that, you know, the case of the lucky numbers. I always wonder if the lucky numbers really mean anything.
They're always lucky for somebody. Just don't know whether it's us.
But really, they're pocket eights, and I think he can get away from this hand, and I
don't see any reason to take the risk here. I think you can wait for a better spot, and I don't know.
I absolutely agree. Larry, well, let's see what happens in part 2.
Welcome back. Well, what do you think? I figured if I was good for a shove pre-flop, then there's nothing to make me believe I'm not good for a shove here.
I might have overreacted here, sir. Yes.
Yeah, I think so. First of all, my M is about 10, not 5. I should not be in panic mode. Second, I don't think 13K is enough to be playing big stack poker, so I don't think this guy's trying to bully me. If he had ace-jack, I'm beat. If he's on ace-king, he really has the only probable hand I can beat. With a bet like that, to protect a hand, I am looking at ace-jack or queen-king or king-king, and I can't beat any of them. It's just too bad I didn't think of all this until after I had clicked the shove button.
You play baseball, sir? I don't, but my wife, she loves the game. She calls this an unforced error.
Sure enough, he shows queen-queen, and after a 2 or a 9, it's all over. A really great read. Well, in hindsight, anyway. Until next time, this is Columbo reminding you of the obvious. Finish making your reads before you act.
I always love when they when you get the epiphany after you're drowning. You know, I love it. And that happens all the time, doesn't it? When you start to put your chips in and you're like, oh my God, I'm beat because of this reason. I didn't think of it. It's too late. Here go the chips. Oh no. And then the guy calls and of course he's got a pair of queens.
Yeah, imagine how good of players we would be if we knew exactly how the hand was going to play out before we started playing it.
Well, Gabe Kaplan said that on High Stakes Poker. He says, I think I'd be in the top 3 or 4 players in the world if I could know everyone's hole cards. Which I totally agree with. I think that if I knew what everyone was holding, I would be pretty successful. But yeah, you know, it's a shame, that you can't come up with that idea before you put them all in there. So
yeah.
But a nice, tight little 1-minute mystery from Columbo. We always appreciate that. And next time, lay down the 8s.
Yeah.
They're just 8s. It's not even 10s.
Yeah. We don't like snowmen down here in Florida.
Do you get enough? Poker, that is. Get in more playing time by buying her a gift card from Red Bamboo Medispa in Northwood Plaza, Clearwater. Call 727-726-6100 or visit redbamboomedispa.com. The winning cards are gift cards from Red Bamboo Medispa.
This is Daniel Negreanu of FullContactPoker.com. You're listening to Ante Up.
Nothing gets me more worked up, Chris, than when I race home, I fire up the laptop, decide, you know what, I want to get into a tournament tonight, and I log on, and I look, and I see running next to a tournament that I would have loved to have gotten into,
right?
You know, particularly maybe it was like an Omaha or something, one of those rare tournaments, yeah. Like a no-limit hold'em, yep. Where you know there's going to be another one coming every 13 seconds.
Not even.
And so nothing drives me crazier than that, but you know, things are different now. You can register late for tournaments on Full Tilt. And, of course, you've been able to do this in the brick-and-mortar casinos for a while, too, as well.
Man,
too.
You know, I wish I had known that. Wish I had known that for Full Tilt, because for the apes, I didn't play a hand for the first hour anyway. That'd have been great.
And a couple of players actually took advantage of it this time in the last apes event. And I think we had 2 or 3 that got to the party late, but still were able to play.
Wow, that's cool. Wish I had known that ahead of time. Why didn't I do my research?
But we saw the latest Casino Player came out.
You love that magazine.
It's a general interest magazine, so it keeps me abreast of all the casino news around here.
Yep.
But Mike Caro is really writing a very solid poker column for him now, and every month I'm finding a little gem of wisdom coming from his column.
He's
that I didn't
genius.
Think about it.
He's mad. He's mad.
You know, in the you go to like Card Player, some of these other magazines, or even our magazine, you know, strategies, and people are all kind of focusing on the stuff that I don't know. I want to say like the low hanging fruit, but the easy topics. Exactly.
Stuff that's tangible.
Exactly. Caro, right? He's a mad genius. He's out there looking on the fringes of poker for stuff that maybe we're not thinking about.
Okay.
And this particular month, the last one I believe is in the August issue. His column gets into the whole math at the poker table, and I hate the math at the poker table. Yeah. I'm terrible at it, right?
That's why you're a journalist.
And he says he's never known a world-class player who did complex calculations during a poker hand. You know, I can't even do complex addition.
You have trouble counting the amount of cards you have to discard when we play deuce to seven, triple draw.
So when you see something like that, it's music to my ears.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I kept reading, and it's a big setup to essentially what he says is something that he stumbled upon at this year's World Series of Poker.
Okay.
Now, he was at the World Series of Poker because he was doing a private seminar for Doyle's Room players, because he's part of the Doyle's Room pros.
Team, yeah.
And he said he entered a few events, and he said, by golly, and, you know, I love people that use by golly.
By golly.
is, by golly, I stumbled upon a new policy. They're letting players enter up to 2 hours after an event starts.
These are just any event, not just rebuys, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Wow. So that's fine. I don't care about that. If they want to sign up late, let them sign up late. Nope, I have no problem with that.
But he took the opportunity of this new revelation to look into whether it's a good deal to
sign up late.
And he says, contrary to probably what people would, the knee-jerk reaction to say, oh my God, why would you want to sign up late? Because you're starting with the same starting ships that you had. And obviously people have got in and busted people and kind of cleaned out the fish. And
right.
You're probably sitting down at a table with somebody that's got 3, 4, 10, 15 times your stack.
Right.
Why would you want to do that, right?
Right.
Sounds like it makes sense.
Mm.
Now he says that's not true. He says that the later in the tournament you go, the more valuable each chip is. And therefore, it could be to your advantage to enter a tournament late.
Hmm. See, now, I don't agree with that. I think that, and here, you know, he's the mad genius, so, and I'm just a genius.
And
so,
you're just mad.
So, oh, okay, I could have gone that way with it, but I didn't. I went the other way with it. I was going the other way. No, but, you know, here's my thing. If you're going to sign up late, why not just sign up at the normal time and sit there and not play a hand? You know, I mean, okay, so you're losing the blinds, but the tournaments he's talking about, the blinds mean nothing for an hour to you. Your stack, we'd have, oh, look, I'm down 200 of my 20,000 or whatever. You know, it means nothing. So,
well, it depends. If he was early lead-in events, you only start with about 3,000 in chips. So
right, but
it's not like
somehow,
the main event where you get 20,000.
Somehow I still think 1 hour of blinds live rather than online. 1 hour of blinds, still, you're still going to have, if you have 3,000 chips, you're still going to have like 2,750 or something.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So it's not that big of a deal. One pot will get your money back. So why not take that hour and use it to your advantage by, you know, putting these players in categories, watching their tendencies, and just getting a tight image. And you'll still have almost the same amount of chips. You'll still be there an hour later, but you'll have all this information now. You know, and plus you may end up getting a monster hand where you could double up. I just totally disagree with it. And I wonder if this is the thinking behind, you know, Phil Hellmuth and Kenny Tran and all these guys who show up late intentionally because they think the chips are
worth
it. Well,
I can't imagine it's Phil Hellmuth because he likes just to show up to his, you know, General George Patton with a bunch of scantily dressed chicks there.
All right, but Kenny Tran didn't do that. He showed up just this week. They showed it on the main event where he showed up late and he's like, oh, look, I only lost this much. No big deal, you know.
Well, the other thing, too, is those are grueling long tournaments, too. I mean,
well, so were the ones he's talking about. He's talking about World Series events.
All right, I'll give you that.
Obviously, because he's talking about the two-hour blinds. So, obviously, it's the main event, and he talked about it. It's not the main event, but it's the World Series events.
All right.
We're not talking about, you know, something down the street at Sarasota. We're talking about, you know, blind levels of 1 and 2 hours. And that's also what I'm assuming, too, is these sign-up periods when you can sign up late or for the first blind level. And, of course, a rebuy.
Yeah, I think that's usually what it is at most places, or at least until the rebuys are over, which could be up to, like, three levels.
Yeah, but I don't think Mike Caro is talking about, you know, one-eye jacks. I think he's talking about main event $10,000 buy-ins, or big $3,000 buy-in kind of thing.
Well, but you know, his point, and let me use an example that he gave here to prove what he's saying.
I love it when you do research.
But his point, though, I think is transferable to all tournaments. They may be more applicable to bigger tournaments where the chip stacks are different. But here is the example he gave. And he says, this may not seem logical at first.
Of course.
But he says in a standard proportional payoff tournament in which first place gets $1 million, it's, you know, like every tournament you and I play.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, actually, I've kind of been running bad, so.
You're only playing in the $500.
I'm playing in the $5 million ones. Now I'm down to the $1 million. And you don't know it's me because I'm using a different name. All right, let's say first place gets $1 million, second place gets $500,000, and third place gets $300,000.
Yes.
All right?
Yes.
I'm in.
Yeah.
Yeah. No problem.
No problem.
He says, if you could buy in for $10,000 when there are only two players left, would you?
Of course.
Of course, because you're going to immediately win $300,000 and have a shot at the $1 million or $500,000. Of course, I don't believe we've got this late registration to the point where you could do that. I'm sure that third place finisher that already had the money would be pretty upset that you bought in and took his money away from
him. You know what I hate, Scott? This is what I hate. When people use examples that are so extreme to make their point because they can't come up with a real life example that would make sense to make us believe their argument. And I love Mike Carroll. I have two of his books. I always enjoy when he's on television. I've seen his video. I love Mike Carroll. So this is not a slight on him, but all writers do this. They'll say they're writing a strategy column and they'll say, all right, you have pocket queens. You notice how the flop always comes rainbow? And it always comes queen 7-2. Okay, it's the most perfect flop ever for your hand. It's never, okay, you have pocket queens, and the flop comes ace, king, jack, all diamonds, and you have no diamond in your hand. And it never comes like that. It's always the perfect scenario. Well, of course, because he can't come up with a real example that says, all right, the payouts, you know, pays 50 spots, and there's 100, and, you know, it's 500 people in the tournament. And, you know, it costs $5,000 to get in, and 50th place pays $5,000. No, he doesn't give an example like that. He gives the one where you're going to make 3,000% on your money or something. And that's ridiculous. It's not a good example, I don't think. But, yeah, of course I would. But that doesn't make a difference. I would love to sit at that table for an hour and not play any hands and watch those people at least to see their tendencies, to see how they play, to see who's weak, who's strong, who's aggressive, who's passive. You know, I would use that hour. Why would I waste that hour?
Well, okay. Well, let's use his example to a less extreme. I'll be Mike Carroll's buddy here.
All right.
All right.
Well, you're going to mess your hair up a little bit.
That's true. Actually, I need to grow some hair.
Actually, it's impossible to mess your hair up because we were in a freaking convertible for 2 hours and your hair still looks the same.
I've got thick hair. My barber says I'm never going to lose it. I appreciate that.
That's good.
It's going to be gray for the rest of my life.
But, yeah, but you won't lose it.
All right. Well, let's use an example of a sit and go.
All right.
All right. Let's say there's 9 players that started.
Mm-hmm.
All right. If you could enter when it's down to only 3 players left, so you're coming in, you're now the 4th player,
mm-hmm.
you're starting with 1,500 in chips,
mm-hmm.
you're obviously at a chip disadvantage because everybody else has everybody else's chips.
Right.
Would you enter the tournament like that, or would you prefer to enter it at the beginning?
I would prefer to enter that one. That
See?
Way.
That, yeah. I think that's his point, is that as people are eliminated, you get closer to the money, your chips are more valuable, even though you have fewer chips than other people on the table. You're still starting with the same number of chips. You're just starting at an advantage because there's fewer players now.
But in his scenario, and not his example, I'm talking about his scenario, you know, you still have hundreds of people to get through. In that sit-and-go scenario you gave me, I have one person to get through because after that they pay 3.
All right, well, let's say 50% of the field is gone.
All right, it's a 10-player sit-and-go, and it's 5, so I'm joining as a 6-player.
Let's say it's a 6,000-player main event. Would you rather enter when it's down to 3,000? For the same number of chips, or would you like to start at the beginning when it's 6,000? That's essentially what he's saying.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. A sit and go is different because you had to clear 1 or 2 people, but clearing, you know, 30 or 40, and plus at that point, you are so below the average stack that your chips can't be valuable at that point. I don't agree with it.
No, but that's his point, though, is it's valuable because you've already lost half the field.
Right, but the amount of chips
you have,
you
still got a butter knife for your little gunfight.
Yeah.
But you don't have to fight off. You have to fight off half as many attackers.
But but you have no bullets in your gun. I mean, it's just
you
can't do anything. You got one bullet.
You
yeah,
got
okay.
a chip in a chair.
Yeah, that's horrible.
Actually, you've got 20,000 chips in
it
a chair.
It takes out all of your poker skill. It takes out all of your ability to play poker properly.
But maybe it's a mathematical calculation on catching.
Well, you're getting away from the actual thing too, because now we're talking about, you know, half the field gone, which would be 4 or 5 hours later.
Well,
which isn't a rebuy
period. That's kind of the point. But generally, the point is that you're
I agree. I disagree.
You're entering a tournament when it's a smaller field.
I'm sorry. I disagree. I just think that there's, I don't know. I just can't see myself giving up that valuable information that's out there at the table that I'm going to be stuck at, you know?
Okay, but to that point, you've got to be disciplined enough not to play any hands if you're going to do that.
Well, if you're at his level and at the level
and you're going to get dealt pocket aces, you're going to have to maintain the integrity of that decision. You're going to have to fold your pocket aces.
No,
and you're not going to do
that
because that's not smart.
No, but that's my point.
But then you get them all in.
You get that chance.
You flop your set. You get it all in with some, donkalicious guy with a 3-high flush draw, and he hits his flush, and boom, you're gone. And had you entered late.
No, that's like a horrible reason to not play.
No, I'm not saying that's a reason, but
that situation could still arise after I play too.
You're giving a either you just sit there for 2 hours and observe the table, or you're off at the Rio buffet eating your crab legs and your shrimp for 2 hours and then show up.
No, no. I invite the Antiup Nation right now to rewind the show and listen when I said at the beginning that you could sit there and fold every hand, but you may get a monster like Pocket Aces, and you wouldn't have seen that hand had you not signed up in time. And I would advise you to play the Pocket Aces, and that would be your chance to double up. And then now you have 3,000 chips or 6,000 chips, and you still have that first hour. Now go to the buffet and have the crab leg. Okay? So you try to put words in my mouth, but I didn't let you.
Yeah, I think they're there. I think they're there. Here's another thing to think about, too. I mean, online, obviously, it's all mathematical, and the payouts are, for the most part, are proportional, although sometimes they bump them up different. But, you know, late registration gives you a little extra time to kind of evaluate the field and decide whether you want to pop in, and you might get a better return on the payout.
That's a good point.
By waiting.
But it's not enough for me to do it. But it's a good. That's a good point. You know, you finally came up with one. But
yay!
But that yeah. You know what I can't believe? What? I can't believe we made this a main topic. We actually did it.
Well, yeah. You know.
How did we stretch it out to be a whole topic?
A lack of research.
Just
a lot of talking about our thoughts and reasoning it out on the air and live. You know, had we researched it, we'd been done in 5 minutes.
And I'd like to thank the people at 2 Plus 2 Forum for burning out Brian Townsend so that we may have this topic for our show today.
Want Rays news from real Rays fans? OutsPerSwing.com. OutsPerSwing.com has interviews, analysis, and all the breaking news for your Tampa Bay Rays. Are you looking for up-to-date news on the most exciting team in baseball? Check out OutsPerSwing.com. That's OutsPerSwing.com.
Hi, this is Clooney Gowan, and you're listening to Annie Up.
Today's Hand of the Week brought to you again by our good friends at the Poker Whiz Wheel at PokerWhizWheel.com. And Chris, the offer is even a little bit better now, because now Antiup listeners can enter the code ANTIUP08 and get 20% off on the Poker Whiz Wheel.
Oh, that's really cool.
Poker Whiz Wheel offers 169 starting Texas Hold'em hand combinations and one easy-to-spin wheel that you can use in front of your laptop or in the casino to figure out what you want to do.
And it's so colorful.
Before the flop. It is.
It's so colorful.
It is. The Whiz Wheel is going to have to be pushed to the side right now.
What?
Because this particular hand of the week, our hero is not disclosing his cards to us at the beginning.
Oh, great. Like, this gig isn't hard enough. Now I got to not know what his cards are, and the Whiz Wheel can't help me. This is not good.
Exactly. We're live without a net in this hand.
Why are you doing this to me? Like, my life's not hard enough as it is. Oh, man. So he's not revealing his hand? Okay.
Not initially.
Okay, so eventually we'll find out what he has.
Exactly.
All right.
We'll do a little retro Whiz Wheel in then.
All right, let's hear it.
All right, so his hand comes from Justin in Michigan City, Indiana. He goes by IrishFan34. I think he's repeat hand
he's
of the week.
He's been on our show before, yeah.
Exactly. You know, he's got to have something to live for because, you know, watching the Irish just isn't doing it now.
I think that's why we have him on again, because we feel bad for him.
All right, so Chris, he's playing at a 1-2 no limit live game in a brick-and-mortar casino.
Very nice.
I do not know whether this brick-and-mortar casino allows late registration for tournaments. So maybe he was just waiting a couple hours after the tournament, you know, playing the cash game. About 35 minutes into a session, he had thrown down just one hand.
Okay, so he's playing kind of tight, and he's hoping that everybody notices that.
Yep. He says the players here were the epitome of weak tight. The effective stacks here are 250 clams, and he is on the baton for this hand. So he says he never looks at his cards before the action gets to me, and he thanks Mike Caro for that.
Hey, it's the Mike Caro edition.
Mike Caro is all over.
And he's everywhere.
Mike Caro, please sponsor us.
Yes.
No.
No.
Not after talking to Chris.
No, I love Mike Caro.
All right, so yeah, that's a good tip. You know, you don't want to look at your cards. You want to look
at
the players.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So he doesn't look at his cards, and he says it miraculously is folded around to him at this table.
Not a miracle.
Well, maybe at this table.
Not a miracle.
You've got a pretty high bar
for
miracles.
If the chips parted on their own or something,
levitated off the table,
that would be a miracle.
That would be pretty cool.
But people use miracle way too often. And it's not really a miracle.
Or that one of us cashed in a Apes event. That would be a miracle.
I think
well.
Al Michaels really ruined it for everyone.
That's true.
Do you believe in miracles? Yes.
That's probably the one miracle outside of a Mother Teresa thing that we could probably accept. All right. So anyhow, the hands fold around to him in a normal, non-miraculous state.
Yes. Okay. Okay.
So he's on the baton, and he says he still has not looked at his hand at this point, but he decides he doesn't need to. Chris, he says in this situation, he's raising 99% of the time with 100% of the hands, And he wants us to ask the poker whiz wheel about that.
Oh, my God.
And I'm asking, and the whiz wheel isn't talking because, of course, you know, the whiz wheel makes his money on the, being able to tell you what to do with the hands that you've looked at.
You know, in the beginning of the show, you say 169 possible hand combinations, but apparently there's 170 because the other one is the backs of the cards. Why are you not looking at your cards in a cash game? Okay, tournament, that's understandable. You don't need to look at your cards in a tournament because it's all about stealing the blinds and surviving another round and, you know, accumulating chips. But in a cash game, the blinds never go up. There's no reason to do this. And you're, what are you going to do? You're going to raise it to win $3? There's no reason to not look at your cards here. I'm aghast.
You're aghast.
I think this is ridiculous. I'm really sorry to hurt Justin's feelings here, but what are you thinking?
All right, at this point, though, he just hasn't looked at his cards. We haven't said he's not going to.
Well, it seems to me that he's not going.
You're kind of jumping the gun here with your criticism. You're amped up.
I could tell by what you said about the 99% and the 100% stuff that he's not going to look at his cards.
All right, well, let's take a look here before you get too upset at him. All right, so I'm peeking here at his hand of the week, and yeah, you're right. He did not look at the cards.
Safe!
He decided to raise.
He can't do that.
He decided to raise the $12 blind.
$12 blind. Now, okay, I understand a lot of these brick and mortars do that. They raise when it's 1 and 2. They raise to 10 or 15 or 12 or 8. But really, you're going to put $12 out to only be called or re-raised by a better hand without looking at your cards, and then what? You're stuck. Why would you do that? This is not a tournament. This is just, to me, it's just ignorance.
All right, now, obviously, I don't play a lot of 1-2 no-limit cash games or any type of no-limit cash games.
Obviously.
And part of the reason is that you get these ridiculous $12 raises. And
pretty standard.
But what, as I said, it doesn't mean they're not ridiculous.
No,
though.
I know. Absolutely.
But, you know, what I don't know if I'm learning, but at least I'm observing is people make these ridiculous raises because they're hoping to get one caller that they can isolate and then squeeze the money out. They're not trying to get just the $3.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really a 12 to win 3, which is what I always thought was strange about it.
No, it is 12 to win 3, though, because you still have to win the hand. And so at this point, you're risking 12 without knowing what you have. And if someone calls you in the blinds, they're going to have something to play with you at, you know, because there's no way they're going to risk 9 more or 11 more dollars against someone who has position on you, who's on the button, who, you know, hasn't played a hand in 35 minutes, so he's obviously tight. Obviously, he's going on his reputation here and that he's in position, and he's doing it to take down the blinds. I don't think he's doing it to get heads up with someone and outplay them. It's not that much about ego. It's about making money, okay? It's not about ego. A lot of people have egos. I'm one of them, but that's not why I would raise there blindfolded, all right? That's just ridiculous. To me, it's just a poor decision, and I'm off the hook. The Whiz Wheel and I are cruising along in this hand, baby.
You're going to walk right out of the...
There's nothing we could do wrong because we wouldn't have played the hand this way.
You're leaving the studio and turning the lights off, leaving me here to finish the hand.
Yeah, we can't do anything wrong in this hand. No matter what I say now, I can't make a wrong decision for him because he got himself in this mess, and he definitely would not have had it. Well, he could have a good hand, but I'm saying he would not have done this had he looked at his cards.
All right, one of us needs to support our listeners, so I'm gonna hang with the Irish fan here. And see how this hand plays out.
You're so diplomatic.
You could be a hater. You could be all hating on him, all right?
Well, I don't hate on him. I'm just saying, why did he do this? Why?
All right, we'll find out as the hand progresses.
You know why? Because he wants the Whiz Wheel. And because he has so little in his life being an Irish fan.
Oh.
We need to ship that Whiz Wheel off to him right away.
All right. Well, let's finish the hand of the week before we lick the Sams here.
I don't even like college football. I just like busting on the Irish.
All right, the small blind folds, but the big blind calls.
Of course
and
he calls.
And thus we have a hand of the week.
Of course he calls. He has a drawing hand, this guy.
You know, he does not say whether the big blind looked at his card yet now, so we don't know whether this is blind versus blind.
I doubt it. I doubt it very much.
All right, so the pot's $25, and the flop comes out 10-8-3 rainbow.
Yeah, of course it does, because all pots come out rainbow when they're trying to justify calling or raising with not looking at their cards.
The big blind checks to us.
Well, we have to bet now.
And are you going to look at your cards?
Oh, I would, but, you know, that's just me being crazy playing poker and looking at my cards. What was I thinking? I'm stupid. What am I doing? What do I do? I don't know anything. But yes, I would look at my cards, but I'm going to have to bet no matter what anyway.
So you got to bet no matter what? So it doesn't matter when you look at your cards?
What I would do is I would bet and then look at my cards. Just to know what I'm up against. Okay. I wouldn't look now because that'd be kind of silly. But yeah, I would bet because I have to now.
But wouldn't you feel a little chest pounding thrill though if you could bet here and your player folds and you just took down a
And I'm the only, one who knows about it. Yay. Make myself feel good.
Well, but then you could be an idiot and say, hey, I didn't look at my cards. Ha, ha, ha. No misdirection. No?
All right. You could say that anyway. And you know, it's just ridiculous.
All right. So it costs $25. What kind of blind bet are you throwing out here?
13 to 15.
13 to 15. All right. So at least you're close to what Justin's thinking now. You guys are on parallel tracks in this hand that you would not be in.
Yeah, because I got ourselves in trouble. We might as well try to save ourselves.
He throws out a C-bet of $15. Yep. Big blind calls. We go to the turn.
We're done with this hand unless we look at 10-10 in the hole. Because obviously this guy has a hand like two overs or Jack 10 or Ace 10. And I'm done with the hand.
Okay. Well, fortunately, Justin is not, so it becomes a better hand of the week.
Yeah, that's good.
All right, so we go to the turn, and the pot is now $55.
Minus the $5 rake.
Well, yeah, that's probably true. Yeah, but, okay. But the rake's not really.
And the dollar for the bad beat, and the dollar for the high hand, and the dollar for the house, and the dollar for the,
dollar for the cocktail waitress. $2 for the valet. Yeah. And all right, so the turn comes, the queen of clubs. So there's two clubs on the board, queen 10, 8, 3.
Okay.
Big blind checks again. Now are you going to take a peek?
Yeah, I'm definitely looking down at a hand now.
All right, well, good. Justin finally decided that he wanted to see what,
let me guess. It's going to be paint rag.
Paint rag. Wow, you are like the amazing, Kreskin.
What does he have, like Jack 4?
King 2 offsuit.
King 2, there you go. King 2 offsuit.
Ouch, he says, and we'll go back and, look at our,
give it to him good, Whizwheel.
Our Whizwheel and see what the Whizwheel would have done beforehand.
Give it to him good.
Late position, caller fold. Does not say raise to $12.
Yeah, I know. And the fold probably isn't bold.
It is a red hand, too.
Red, fire alert.
Exactly.
Don't play this hand. Wow. Yeah, king what, deuce? Oh, that's
terrible. All right, but I'm with Justin here. We end up winning this hand. We're going to show the Whizwheel and Chris how to play poker.
Yeah, we ain't winning this hand.
All right. No. Let's see. All right, so he checks here.
We check, too?
Yes.
Oh, not good. If we check, then we're telling them that we're afraid of the queen, and
well, we are though.
Yes, I know, but the guy checked to us, so
you would have thrown another bet out.
I might have put another bet out, but no, I'm done with the hand. I really am. I'm checking, but I think the reason why the big blind checked here was because he either has still two over cards, or he has the 10, and now he's scared of the queen. But I don't think I think we're done because I don't think we can get him off his hand now.
Hmm. Okay.
So all I'm right. Done. I'm done with the hand. But who knows? Who knows what a bet would have done here? I don't know.
That's true. All right. So the river comes. It's an offsuit 6.
Yeah, nothing's there.
Big blind checks one more time.
The big blind could have 7-9, but I doubt it. It sounds like just big cards, and he hit his queen, and he's trapping, or he has a 10, and he's afraid of the queen. So it's either that or it's, you know, something weird.
Okay. Well, our hero says that he thinks by the check that he has nothing.
And that could be true. That could be true, because if he had a hand, he'd probably want to value bet on the end. So that could be true. He's probably going to take a stab at it now, right?
And he says the big blind is one of the smart players at the table, and he thinks that he could bet maybe half pot here to make it look like he's value betting a 10 or middle pair.
Yeah, what did he bet that time when he won the hand with the trips? Did he bet? I guess he bet like pretty decent bet on the end there too, right? So that might look like he has a hand. Yeah, I mean, if they're astute players, they might fold. But if they have anything like 10s or, you know, queens or even 8s, maybe he may call for a small enough bet, so I'd make it a big one.
All right, well, here's the situation we're in here. We can't, we can't think that our king high is good.
Right.
Right.
Can't win without a bet.
And the big blind checked, so that's somewhat a weakness there.
Yeah,
weakness. So we got to make a bet, right?
Yeah, we have to make a bet. I mean, if you want to win the pot, you're going to have to make a bet. But some people don't want to win the pot. Some people just want to be done with it because they don't want to lose any more money. If you want to win the pot, you're going to have to bet. I would bet, if I'm going to bet, I'd bet like 35.
Okay, our hero bets 30. His opponent tanks for a few minutes, keeps looking at him and the board, and then makes a crying call with ace-king offsuit.
All right, let me look at the board here. Wow, that's a huge call.
Ace-high.
Ace-king. That's like, I thought two overs. I thought he had ace-10 or jack-10. Wow, with nothing he makes that call. That's a great call.
So I wonder if the bet here, and I think the bet size was right, but I think this is where you kind of value... figure out where the bet is here, too, and whether he calls or not.
If you bet,
apparently thought that we missed and we were trying to...
If you bet the pot, that's a lot of money on that board, because it doesn't look like you want to get paid off. It looks like you want to steal it. And some people will interpret it that way and call you with nothing. That's a great call. And I think that was the right amount to bet if you're going to bet. Can't imagine betting more, and I can't imagine betting less, because he's going to call less. If he calls 35 or 30, he's going to call 20 or 25.
Exactly.
So. That's a great call that guy made. We sent him the whiz wheel.
Sadly, our good friend just did not send us the address for his opponent here. So, opponent's going to have to go to...
Well, you know, we'll send it to Justin and say, go find that guy and give it to him. Because he looked at his cards.
Or better yet, he could tell him to go to pokerwizwheel.com and enter Antiup08 and get his 20% off and buy his own.
That's right. That's right.
But anyhow, he goes off and Justin goes off and says that he knows... that Chris is going to tear this one up because I did after I reviewed my session. Feel free, he says. I was super donk here. Capital S, capital D, squished together.
All right, good.
No trademark, but I'm going to work on that myself.
No, I don't feel so bad. but really, to get back to the initial thought on this, there's really no reason to do that, whether you're going to raise or not. There's no reason you can't fold there. You're going to be one off the button on the next hand. It's a cash game. There's no reason to do it. You know, if you're desperate in the blinds and, you know, at the tournament, that's one thing. But there's no reason to do it at all in a cash game. There's going to be another hand, and it's going to be the same blind. And it's just, to me, it was foolish. His bankroll now is essentially gone for this. He's going to have to rebuy pretty soon. You know, 57, 58 bucks, whatever it is, that's a lot of money on King Deuce off, and you didn't look at your cards. Think about that for a minute. Thanks for the hand, and thanks for the entertainment, but really... you could just buy the whiz wheel, and you would have saved yourself a lot of money.
Well, once again, we want to thank our sponsor for the hand of the week at PokerWhizWheel.com.
And I want to thank our guests for not coming on the show today so that we could talk about late entrance into tournaments. I am Chris Cosenza.
And I am Scott Long.
And we will see you at the tables. Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and was recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network. You know what sucks is that you're not going to have any green snot balls this year.
Yeah, that's true.
We were really hoping
that's
for you.
That's really what's going to be lost in there.
All right, go ahead.
All right, Chris. So
I told you not to say that.
Oh, shit. You know. And the Poker Whiz Wheel offers 169 starting hold'em.
You know, you've been saying it for three, 4 weeks in a row. You need to say it. Just say it. You know what? The Poker Whiz Wheel offers 169 possible starting hand combinations in Texas Hold'em. How's that? Why don't you try that one? Say it. Go ahead. Just say it. I can't do everything for you, buddy.
So what are we going to do? I mean, just pick it up there or do you want me to start from the beginning?
I think we should keep it in the show. This is hilarious.
Yeah, I don't think so.